The playoffs are near, and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams Lee.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted them in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our heart. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores! Public display. His ambush in me. They slayed the dragon. He lives
existence. Existence. Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. Use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, hockey season. That will get you $5 off your order at Zephyr Epic. Zephyr Epic has you covered for all of your trading card needs, so be sure to go check them out. Located in Surrey, local company, Zephyr Epic. The best part about them, in our humble opinion, is that they ship free anywhere in Canada on any order over $50. From
West Kelowna to West Ham Island.
Home of the West Kelowna Warriors.
This is true. And the West Ham Island is home of the George C. Rifle Migratory Bird Sanctuary. Quads.
George C. Rifle?
Yep.
Who's that?
He's got a bird sanctuary there. on West Ham Island. You know where West Ham Island is?
No idea. I'll
tell you what, it's actually not that far from West Kelowna. Well, it is a little bit, actually. A decent little drive. It's an island off of Delta here in BC, Delta. Just down the road. Somewhere you would have never been, though, because you don't leave Burnaby ever. Even if you leave Vancouver, the only spot you're going, Rogers Arena, you've never been out of Burnaby. This month, you haven't left Burnaby. But West Ham Island, just off of Delta there. Little bird sanctuary. It's open from 9 to 4 all year long. I don't know about statutory holidays or Christmas. I didn't look too deep into that. But most days...
So it's driving distance from here.
Yep. You show up there at 11:30. You go in there. You look at birds.
Well, how do you get to the island? Is there a ferry?
Yeah, there's a... You just show up there. They'll get you on the island.
How? How will they get you on the island?
They just put you on there. And you can go and they got sandhill cranes.
You need to give me a better answer than this. How do you get to this island?
The island, West Ham Island, there is a bridge.
Oh, it's a bridge.
There's an east-facing aerial view of the West Ham Island Bridge is what I'm looking at. The island was named by Harry Trim, who came from West Ham, Sussex.
Are these made-up names?
No, these are all real words that I'm saying in real truth. You can show up there at 11 o'clock, take the bridge, you're across the street, boom, you got 740 acres of beautiful birds to look at. They got walking trails, bird blinds, lookouts. There's even a bird gift shop, Quad, so you can go out there. You get out there, you start looking for birds. What do you see? This is what everyone wants to know. What kind of birds are you going to see out there? You're going to see the sandhill cranes, bald eagles, mallards, spotted towheels, as well as lesser snow geese, greater and lesser yellow legs, long-billed dough-witchers, and western sandpipers are some of the ones that you'll see often. But here's the cool thing. You can see up to 250 species of birds. If you get a good day, you might catch 100 there. 100 different species of birds on a good day. That's what I hear.
I'm looking at photos. It looks like a pretty spectacular place. But I do have to, I got a bit of a gripe here because West Ham Island isn't a town or a city. It's not its own municipality. It's in Delta. And the closest Canada Post is by Highway 99 downtown Delta.
If you're living on the bird sanctuary.
It's actually in Ladner.
And you want some cards. It's not just because you're living in West Ham Island. Is that what it's called? West Ham Island. Just because you're on West Ham Island doesn't mean you can't get the Zephyr Epic cards. I tell you, if people go on to West, they go to zephyrepic.com. You're looking for the top loaders, those hard cases that say rookie card on the top. Buy those off of Zephyr Epic. I don't care if you're on West Ham Island or West Kelowna. You can get them. They'll deliver them right to your door. Amazon style or something. I don't know what they used, or DHG or something. Deliver it.
What?
That's the little, it's a delivery company, I think.
DHG?
DHG, I think.
Oh.
Or something like that.
Okay.
DGH? I don't know, the Rugby
DHL?
Sevens.
DHL? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, DHL, that's it. They got a little car at the Rugby Sevens. It drives the ball out to the middle, a little RC car.
Oh.
Some guy operates it, and it's got DHL all over, DHG or whatever
DHL,
it is.
DHL, the delivery company.
Yeah, they deliver the rugby ball right out to the center, Rugby Sevens. Fire goes off, boom, you're playing a Rugby Sevens game, 15 minutes, no half or something. Maybe there is a half, I can't remember.
Okay.
7-minute halves, boom.
Getting a little off the rails here, but Zephyr Epic, Zephyr Epic. On all platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. Go shoot them a follow. Go check out their website. Go check out their location.
Go buy your hard case covers from them. That's the, you don't have to run out to the local card shop anymore. Boom, you just zephyrepic.com, $5 off, free shipping over 50. Just get yourself a bunch of those top loaders.
Yeah, there you go.
You know?
You want some cards to put in there, though.
Yeah, I'm going to have a conversation with the folks over at Zephyr Epic. It's been a long time since we've done a pack opening.
It's going to be a lot of fun when we do. Be a lot of fun.
Get that series two going.
Yes.
The Silly Pod Colson rookie
card. Yes, we need some Pod Colson rookie cards.
Or the Will Lockwood card too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Both in the series two. Good set.
Yeah. We're also delivered to you by the great folks at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word, CONVODD. That would get 25% off and free delivery on your first order with the DoorDash app. Does not get much better than that, folks. My name is David Guadrelli, joined as always by the man who built the place. We're both misdressed for the weather. I just say misdressed. You understand what
I mean? Yeah, but it's hot in here still.
It is hot in the studio. It's always a little bit hot in the studio. But it's starting to rain outside, it looks like. And that's not good for two dudes wearing shorts. You're wearing a tank top. I got a t-shirt on. But we're here, and we're ready to talk about the Vancouver Canucks.
Now, before we talk about the Vancouver Canucks,
I'm ready to talk about
the Vancouver Canucks. Well, I first want to talk about DoorDash. Okay. Listen, yeah, the DoorDash people, they love when I talk about them. They love when I do the videos. Got a message from the big boss, the guy who's even, he's six level above you in the company. He sent me an email the other day. They love the DoorDash videos. DoorDash, I'm on DoorDash the other day. They're going to love this too. I'm on the Dash Mart. You know, they got a clearance section. You know what Dash Mart is, right?
Yeah. Explain it though.
So it's like a grocery, I don't know, it's a grocery store. You go in there, there's a shop. They got pops and chips and all, whatever you need.
Okay.
They got a clearance section, so I'm on there the other day. My fiance, she's pissed, because I go on this DoorDash Dash Mart app, and they had five pack of dye, would you say?
It doesn't matter.
So there's five dice in this, five dye, whatever it is.
We misspeak too much to care
about
that.
Yeah, five dice. I'm looking at five dice over here, and it's a five pack of dice. And I need them because I'm going on a bachelor party in a couple weeks. And this game where you stand on the end of the table, you throw the dice up in the air. Beer die, I think it's called.
Never heard of it.
I think it's a more of an American drinking game. But I think, I never played it that much growing up. But we're going to try a bunch of that. So I ordered 15 dice.
Mm.
And it was on the clearance section, 39 cents a pop. You know, you're looking at, what, 7 cents a dice right there. You can sell those on the street for 50 cents. You make your money back. Boom, you sell 2 dice, you're good. So she's all mad that I ordered all these random things off of there. Got, you know, $1 energy drinks. The 5-hour energies, they're on the clearance section. $1.25 or something.
Is die is the singular and dice is plural, right?
I don't know.
A set of dice? It's not a set of die. It's a set of dice, right?
Okay, but then you're talking about the set being the subject of the dice.
No, sorry. So plural, like if I'm talking plural, if I have 2 dice.
If I roll, am I rolling 2 die or 2 dice?
2 dice.
Yeah. What's the die?
A die is 1 if you've got 1 of them.
Okay.
I think. I'm the one that's, you know, supposed to know all this.
Yeah, you can say it. I'm an idiot. You can say it.
That's not what I meant.
Five dice. That. So I got 15 dice now ready to go on the house. But I also got some electrolytes. Got these things you put in you put them into water and they start bubbling like crazy. And it's electrolyte. I was looking for them because I wasn't feeling like super sick, but I wasn't feeling great. And everyone, and then I'm looking, I'm doing my research, WebMD, I'm all over it. I don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm doing my own research and I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen here? Electrolytes, they make you feel better. So I'm like, okay, let's buy these electrolyte pills. And then I look at the reviews and all the reviews are just about how these are really good for hangovers.
Okay.
All the reviews, 5 stars. This is great. I never get hangovers anymore. Drink one before bed, drink one when I wake up, I'm fine. So I was thinking, okay, well, this is good. I got a wedding this weekend. I got a bachelor party next weekend. So I got all these electrolytes now too.
All right.
That's what's new in my life, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing how they work. We're past the 10-minute mark, which means we got to get going here, Chris.
I was also told the other day by a listener that they didn't like last show because we only did 7 minutes of BSing around.
And then there's someone out there who's like, oh, thank God they didn't keep going with the non-hockey talk for a full 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, we got a lot to get into, and it's my favorite thing to talk about, so let's do it.
Yeah, development camp. We have concluded development camp. We're recording this on Friday, hoping to have it out Friday afternoon as well. Development camp has concluded. The prospects are going up the grouse grind, I think, as we speak. There'll be coverage of that on the Canucks Twitter account, I'm sure, and also we'll probably get something on it on CanucksArmy.com, if I'm being honest with you, because, Chris, it's officially starting to feel like a slow off season. Like, all of a sudden, things are slowing down quite a bit. We don't have too many little news things to get to. Canucks made a few minor signings. Brad Hunt signed with the Colorado Avalanche for 2 years. Different things happened, but it wasn't anything significant since our last episode. So I think we'll just pick it up with development camp Friday. Development camp concludes on Thursday with a scrimmage. Tell us what you saw, what you think you took away the most from development camp as a whole.
Yeah, well, first of all, it does feel slow because when we were leaving development camp, you know, we're obviously talking to Canucks PR, seeing what's up, and they're like, well, don't really have anything for like 6 weeks, right? We don't really have anything until, September 16th? I just booked my hotel for Penticton. That'll be nice, bringing the golf clubs for sure.
Did you get 2 beds?
No, you're not coming, I thought.
I thought I was coming.
No, okay. You're not coming. No chance you're driving out there to Penticton.
I was going to carpool with you.
I don't think you're coming. Because I got a king-size bed, so you're not coming.
That's big enough.
No, it's not. Maybe. You can have the little pull-out couch. Anyways, development camp takeaways. Yeah, I mean, first of all, just excellent start to the Vancouver Canucks' season when it comes to the prospects and how they're going to develop them different this year. I mean, you've already seen additions to the development staff in Mike Komisarek, Mikhail Samuelson, seeing the Sedins move into that role. But kind of hearing some of the behind-the-scenes things from guys like Ryan Johnson and Mikhail Samuelson, I found it pretty interesting. Like, there's a lot more confidence, and you can hear that from Ryan Johnson about this year, being able to, as Ryan Johnson loves to say, look the prospects in the white of their eyes. That's his go-to saying.
See the white of his eyes.
He didn't get a chance to do that through Zoom or through the calls that he was having with a lot of these players. So getting them back here to development camp, it's the first time we've seen development camp for the Vancouver Canucks since 2019. And I think it was massive. Like, you could just hear the way that everyone was talking about it. The players were very excited on the first few days. Things started to crank up on day 3 and 4. And obviously we got to see the scrimmage for the final day there on Thursday. And then today on Friday, they're doing the grouse grind and doing some team building activities. I hope that they get to have some fun tonight as well. I hope those prospects get to have some fun. They've been working hard all week. So biggest takeaways was just that this is going to be a very different, and you know what? This should be a very different year for development of the Vancouver Canucks prospects and how they're treated, how they're supported. It feels like there's a lot more in place to make the Vancouver Canucks prospects be in a better spot than they were last year. Even talking to some of the players, like – they were very happy that Mikael Samuelsson is now going to be in Sweden on the ground, going to games with them. I know that even with like Jonathan Lekkerimäki, he mentioned that he lives like 10-minute drive away from Lekkerimäki's home, so he's going to be able to talk to him a lot. That's huge, and I just think that having a guy on the ground there out in Sweden is going to be massive. I know Samuelsson said he was going to travel around Europe as well. He won't just be in Sweden, but you could see it at camp. I mean, I think it was 10 Swedes there was on the roster here at this development camp, so a big portion of the Canucks prospects will be in Sweden this next year. A lot of them are actually going to be playing in the Allsvenskan, which is kind of interesting, and that's most of the like the teenagers that kind of stick out a little bit, like Lekkerimäki is going to be there, Myrenberg is going to be there, so we'll get to see some players in the Allsvenskan, Hugo Gabrielsson as well, who, by the way, the Canucks flew him in from Sweden, even though he wasn't participating in any on-ice action. We've talked about it in the past. He's got a shoulder injury where he's going to need surgery and not going to be ready to start next season. But he was here and was able to hang out with some of the prospects as well. So that was nice to kind of get him involved. Obviously, he hasn't had a chance to be at a development camp just yet. So nice little addition there. And that's honestly the big takeaway I have from it is just it's really good to get these guys together and get them to be able to meet the Sedins, meet the development staff, see what Ryan Johnson's all about when he's on the ice with them, see what Chris Higgins is like on the ice with them. But all in all, just a great week, and I think it sets up for, like I said, a very different year of development where the Canucks need to do a better job of developing their players, and you can feel the commitment behind the new regime of what they want to do with development, putting guys into position to succeed and adding more staff into certain areas. Like, you know, we'll play the clip actually right now of Ryan Johnson talking about it. Like, I asked Ryan, like, how does he feel about the difference that you're going to see for development last year compared to this year? And this is what Ryan Johnson had to say about it.
Well, like I said, we've added a lot of young players, and then to really build out our development staff that I think is as important as a process in rebuilding an organization or retooling an organization. So we've got the support, the resources, young players, I think, which insinuates we're heading in the right direction.
I think it is all about resources. Like that was the buzzword there, right? Is resources, and we've got everything that you need. And we heard a similar message from Patrick Alvin. We wrote about this at Canucks Army. The Canucks posted the video, but Patrick Alvin giving the intro speech at the start of the week really stressed that there's no excuse for any of you not to make the NHL because we have all the resources you need. It's all up to you to put in the work now. We have everything you need. You're going to get to work with Hall of Famers and Daniel and Henrik. That was the messaging from Patrick Alvin. And like you said, Chris, you contrast that with what they had before. It's night and day. Like, at this point, there is no excuse for not developing players because we've heard all the excuses with the Gadjeviches, the Lins, and all the players who turned into nothing, and there's no more excuses. Like, it needs to be better. I think the organization clearly saw that, and now with Cammy Granato kind of championing that department and, you know, everybody reporting to her in that department, like, it's a good thing for the organization that they, one, had this development camp, and two, the messaging was so clear and the messaging was consistent in, we have all the resources for you and these are available to you at any time.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think even like the way that Mikael Samuelsson talked about it was like, he said that I like to mentor prospects and help them. That's the best thing for me. And with this organization, with the people who are working here now, it was an easy choice. And that's kind of what you mentioned to speak of, like what they're going to have at home base. And actually, I have the full Samuelsson clip. So let's just run this about Mikael Samuelsson coming in to be a guy who's going to help with coaching and a lot of developing with these players. So let's just hear from Samuelsson first and we'll react to this.
I've done it before. I like developing. Like, I love developing. I've seen the other side too. I try to work as a GM. I've seen that part too, but in my mind, it fits my life, great. And that's what I want to do. If I'm going to be selfish about it, I like to call mentor them or like try to help them. That's the best thing for me. And also with this organization, with the people who's working here now, that's for me, was an easy choice.
Samuelsson was smiling a lot. That was the takeaway I had. Samuelsson looks really happy to be in the role he's in. And you heard it there, right? Like, this is the role that he sees for himself. This is a role he wants to be in. He's not going to stay in Vancouver. He's going to go back to Sweden. But that's with the purpose of being a resource for the prospects, boots on the ground in Sweden. So, you know, think of how many players the Canucks have. They're going to be in the SHL, in the Allsvenskan League. And I know we're going to touch on a few of them here, but, like, Samuelsson's going to be there as a resource for those kids. And that matters, right? Like, you've heard... you've heard all the other prospects talk about Chris Higgins, Ryan Johnson helping them out, but to expand that, like, that matters, right? Like, you've got all these different voices now that are helping these prospects, and, you know, like, with all due respect to Chris Higgins, I'm assuming that Michael Samuelsson can relate a little bit better to Jonathan Myrenberg than Chris Higgins can, right? And I know Chris Higgins will still have things to offer, and same with Ryan Johnson. My point just being that, you know, Samuelsson, being someone from Sweden, knows the Swedish ranks really, really well. You know, he can relate a little bit more with what Myrenberg or someone like that is going through.
Perfect example, because I spoke to Jonathan Myrenberg about this, and this is what he said. He said, it's just really good to have someone watch you closer. I haven't had someone to talk to a bit, so having Samuelsson will be good. I feel more secure in the organization with that. Like, that quote means a lot to me. Like, to hear the way that he said it is, like, feel more secure with the organization is kind of big. Like, that's something that I think a lot of these prospects want. And to now have somebody on the ground being able to... just think if there's, like, a problem. Like, think if there's a problem with Lucas Forsell not playing any minutes. Say he's a 13th forward all the time. And it's not like he's calling... It's almost like... It's not like you're about to get into a fight and you call your big brother in. But, like... Wouldn't hurt to have Mikael Samuelsson come around and have, you know, sit in with a conversation with the GM or the head coach with Lucas Forsell and say, like, what's going on here? You know, I think Mikael Samuelsson carries a lot of weight behind him when he comes and shows up to help out these players. And I think that's just an example. Like, a lot of these players can ask questions to him. It's just going to be massive to have a guy on the ground out there and to talk to Samuelsson. And, you know, this is his passion, right? Like, this is what he talked about. This is what he wants to do. He called it almost a little selfish, right? That this is the role that he wants to be in because it's so perfect for him. And now with the Sedins and with Alvin in this role, like, this is why he wants to be here now. So I think it's going to be massive for the prospects. And like I said, just setting up this whole thing at development camp here, it's a good first building block for what we're going to see for a year of development of these players. You want to just dive into some of these players now? Like, who do you want to, like, start with? Do you want to go, let's start with some forwards.
Well, okay. I was going to say start with Myrenberg because we were in Sweden, but I think in the same vein, we can talk about Linus Karlsson because he was a guy who impressed. And he's one of the topics and one of the options in our Atlas Goods poll question, which we'll get to soon, Chris. But Linus Karlsson, what did you make of his week as a whole? Because a lot of expectations for him.
Yeah, and you know what? A couple days in, I was like, oh, I think we set the expectations too high for Linus Karlsson. I didn't think he was very good. On the first couple days, was definitely a little rusty on the first day. Day two, it wasn't like, you know, like Linus Karlsson doesn't move very well, right? And when you move really well, you start to stick out in these development camps. So you needed to see a lot from Karlsson in the scrimmage because that's where his game had to shine because it didn't look that great in the drills. Like he was handling the puck fine, he was shooting the puck fine, but because movement's so big in all these drills that we saw in the first couple days, it's not like Karlsson looked that great. Then the scrimmage shows up, and yeah, he looked excellent. Like, he was potentially the best player in the scrimmage. He scored a couple of goals, looked really strong with his drives to the net. His hands are a little bit better than I thought once he actually got into game action and was going up against defenders. There was a lot to like in Karlsson's game for sure. I do still worry a little bit about the foot speed. Like, you know, if you're a guy who some people expect to maybe play NHL games this year, you should really be sticking out in a camp situation like this for development camp where a lot of these guys are, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. Karlsson should be sticking out big time. He definitely did in the scrimmage, but you still have to worry a little bit about that foot speed. Like, he's got great hands, but I think for him, he's got to get that foot speed up a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see him work with skating coach Mackenzie Brado there in Abbotsford. But I don't see Karlsson being a guy who's going to, you know, crack the NHL at a camp. I think he's going to need to go to the AHL. He's going to get power play time. He also mentioned to us that he wants to be a penalty killer, and he really appreciated last year that his coach in the SHL was willing to trust him on the PK. So we'll see him do a little bit of that in Abbotsford, but just see if he can get working with the skating coach and improve a little bit, you know, tune up a few things. Mackenzie Braid does a great job out there. And to hear that he was on a lot of Zoom calls with these prospects throughout the year was a very good thing to hear at this development camp. But Carlson really liked him, and I thought his best day was by far the scrimmage when he got into game action. He's not a player that shines in drills, but he really did shine. Probably the best player in the scrimmage on Thursday.
You know who did shine in drills? Yanni Yermo.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, he wasn't bad in the scrimmage. Like, he didn't look out of place. He didn't look bad in the scrimmage. But I was getting a lot of questions about Yanni Yermo in the Canucks Army comment section and whatnot. And the answer remains the same, that he looks great in drills, looked fine in the scrimmage. But the problem with Yanni Yermo is his hockey sense, which when I was talking to a scout, like, you know, a lot of scouts believe that you can't teach hockey sense. Like, you can teach someone how to skate, you can teach someone how to change their stride, but you just can't teach hockey sense, and apparently that's where Yanni Yermo is lacking, and that's what's holding him back from moving up in Finland.
Yeah, no, I mean, Yermo is an extremely talented athlete, right? Like, he's a very talented athlete, has a strong shot, he skates really well. The worry is that if he can turn that athleticism into a really good hockey player, right? That's the big question. And yeah, you're right. Like, in drills, he looked excellent moving the puck, you know, just picking up full speed so fast. There's a lot to like, man. Like, he was a player that definitely stuck out as one of the better skating defensemen. But yeah, you go and you watch him play a game and you watch the game tape, and he doesn't really flash like he does in the drills. So I wonder what they can do with him. It's something that maybe he just needs to develop. And you're right, you can't teach hockey sense, but you can develop it as you go on as a hockey player. And it'll be interesting to follow him over the next, you know, he's going to be at least a couple more years over in Finland before we start to even talk about him potentially coming over and maybe playing in the AHL. Like, there's a long route for Yanni Yermo, but you're right. Like, there's a lot of really good skill in his game, but he's got to be able to put it together. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do next year in Finland.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you want to talk about Arshdeep Bains. Tell me about him.
Just, like, probably two of the 4 days, he was the best player on the ice to me. Like, Arshdeep Bains is and was the most consistent player of this group, I think, throughout the whole camp. He receives passes so well. He makes good passes. His shot always has a little bit of giddy up behind it. He's just a player that like did everything right at this development camp. Like, I think Bains was the guy who actually, coming out of this camp, he impressed me just the most of like how consistent he was. Like, you watch drills and you're like, you know, especially me, like, okay, I'm filming a lot of video here at these drills, right? So the big name players I'm focusing on, make sure I'm getting good video on them. And it's like, yeah, I'll record Klimovich every time the puck's about to touch his stick and he flubs it so many times, or he doesn't receive a pass very well, or he just completely misses the net by like a mile. But then with like Bains, it's like he's always just going to get a decent shot on the goaltender. He's always going to be able to pick up the puck, whether it's in his feet, ahead of him, behind him. Like, he takes passes so well. He does everything at such a high level, and he works hard. Like, that's what everyone told us about him, is like, just watch his like his work habits in practice, and he's working so hard. He's one of the players where, you know, you watch them do a drill when they're battling in the corner, and you see a lot of guys just kind of, you know, put like a stick on a guy and kind of not really push on him. Like, Bains, even when he's just being like a stand-in defender of a drill, like, he's pushing you around. He's making you work in practice. And then when he gets a chance, like, you know, he's dropping the shoulder into guys. There was just a lot to like about Bains' game, and I think that just the consistency and the ability for him to play at a high pace is going to be great for him in the AHL. Like, I don't think he's going to play NHL games. I don't think that is how good he's going to be. But it could just take, like, you know, a year of him playing AHL games before we can have more of a discussion. But we've got to see what he can do in the AHL first. But I do feel a lot more confident thinking that he can hop right in the AHL after seeing how much he stuck out at development camp.
Yeah, and one thing we noticed with Bains right away, heard about his hockey sense, but I saw it. I definitely saw it in that scrimmage especially. Obviously, not so much in drills, but the hockey sense, the hockey IQ, the playmaking ability, you saw it in the scrimmage. There were even a few instances where Bains made a pass that was really deceptive, so deceptive that his teammates weren't even ready for a pass. Like, there was one where he broke in, had two defenders on him, faked a shot, and then went behind the backhand pass, but the guy who was supposed to be receiving the pass was like watching the net because he also thought Bains was gonna shoot, so there was no one there. But little deceptive moves like that, that was my first chance to watch Bains in person, obviously. I was impressed as well. So
yeah, I think also just like the other things that you saw in the scrimmage from Bains was like, So in drills, right, like you're a lot of the drills that you see at development camp are like you receive a pass, it's three or four strides, you pass it off, you catch the puck again, three or four strides, you shoot. The thing that you were able to see from Baines in the scrimmage was just like coming in on three-on-ones and making like really smart one-touch passes where the puck's on his stick for a split second and it's off to the next guy and it's accurate. Like passing is something that's very strong for him. But the big thing is like every shot that he took at this development camp, and I was there all 4 days, I was there for every minute of it, I did not see maybe more than once or twice Baines like flub a shot when you're watching Danila Klimovich and it's like 40% of the shots he takes are not good shots. They, you know, don't have any get up behind them. With Baines, it's like 95% of the shots he takes are like not going to beat a goalie when they're standing there and ready for you, but they're going to create rebounds. They're going to be scoring chances. Like, he's very consistent. That's the number one word that I have to take away from watching Baines play is like his consistency is through the roof. And I think that's going to be huge for him. I think that was what was so huge for Chase Waters last year in the AHL was he was so consistent and he consistently got better throughout the season, which is why he's going to be relied upon to be, you know, an important piece down the middle for the Abbotsford Canucks moving forward. And Chase Waters is a guy who, you know, is very much praised for his work ethic and practice, and you hear a lot of the same things about Archdeep Baines. So, heck of a camp for Baines. Like, he's if you're giving out, like, stars of the camp, like, Archdeep Baines is my number one star from this camp.
That's interesting that he's number one for you. Okay, we'll cut to break. On the other side...
Well, who's your number one star? You said it's interesting.
Koskenvo. I've said this.
Yeah, because you saw a lanky... I swear, Koskenvo's legs are taller than you.
I know. I'm not even joking.
He's got no torso. He's all legs. I couldn't believe standing up next to him.
Yeah.
Like, I thought... And you know what? I was a little shocked your boy, your son, Archer Seelov's there. Not that big. I thought he was 6'4".
He's 6'1". Yeah, he's like 6'1", 6'2", I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a little bit taller than PJ and Woodley over there, but... Yeah, Kukoski, man, what a physical specimen. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, I can see what, like, and you know what? I spent a lot of time with, people are going to like this because they say, I just was reading the reviews of the show and they like the goalie talk in the reviews for some reason.
Yeah.
You watch Koskenvo, like, just do everything at like, when he's working with Clarkie in these drills before practice.
Yeah.
And Koskenvo, like, Clark will never have, like, a smile on his face. But he's, like, very angry all the time. It feels not, like, angry, but he's very, like,
serious.
Forceful.
He's serious.
He's forceful and serious with his guys. But, like, the way that he talks to, like, Ty Young and Brett Brochu, compared to, like, when he tells Koskenvo to do a drill and he does something, it's, like, you can like, he's not as, like, you know, the mean guy that he is to everyone else, it seems like. With Koskenvo, he just, like, he likes Koskenvo, man. Yeah. You can see it. With, like, how he speaks to him. And that's the thing. Like, when you're watching these goalies work with Clark, especially in that little rink there out at UBC, was, like, you could hear everything, right? If you're standing at that end of the rink, you can hear pretty much everything Clark's saying to him. And you could just hear the tone. Like, he really likes Koskenvo, man. And I could see why. Because, like, just physically, he looks like an absolute, like, perfect what you would like to see a goaltender.
Yeah, exactly. He's, like, the epitome of a project goaltender, right?
Yeah. Like, if he was if he wasn't a goalie, he'd be a 6'5" right shot defenseman. Like, that's what he would be. That's the example of what he is.
He's got a lot of, like, very transferable skills, I think, to various things. I'm blown away by Koskenvo.
When he came out and talked to us, like, he walked out and it was like, whoa, like, this dude is, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
His hands go past his knees when he walks.
Yeah.
Well, not actually. Well, no, but like, they're long. He's got long arms.
He's got no torso. It goes right from the hips to the nipples. There's no room for abs. If he was jacked, he wouldn't have any. There's no room for him. He's all legs. He's got the longest legs I've ever seen.
Yeah, he does have really long legs, which, you know, like you pointed out, it looks like he's wearing bigger pads than everybody else.
It does. It looks like his pads, like, I couldn't, when they were watching that drill where him and Ty Young were out there, and they were doing that thing that Ian Clark likes where you put your feet on either post and you watch behind the net, and it was like, Ty Young had this massive hole in his five hole when they were doing it. And then, like, Koskenvo gets down, and it's like he's foot to foot, post to post, and there's no holes anywhere on the ice. And it's like, oh, like, I can see why Clarkie likes this guy. And then, yeah, I think smart kid as well. He's going to Harvard, and he gave a kind of funny answer about it, too, when we asked him. I was like, like, why was Harvard your choice? And he was like, because it's Harvard. I was like, that's awesome. So, yeah, he wants to win the starting role next year and also wants to get an opportunity to potentially be Finland's goalie as well.
Because it's Harvard. I love that. All right, we'll cut to break. On the other side, we'll get to the poll question, our Atlas Goods poll question. It has to do with development camp and the prospects, folks. And then we'll talk some more about, you guessed it, JT Miller. Keep it locked, keep it loaded on Canucks Conversation.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And a massive thank you to all of our sponsors here at the Canucks Conversation Podcast. Chris, our episode 279 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods. Go to atlasgds.com. Use promo code CC15 to get 15% off your first order of pop rinds. These are the best fresh pork rinds straight out of your microwave or air fryer. In the tweet, I wrote freak pork rinds instead of fresh. So that's a miscue on my part.
We had a good run.
I'm actually going to correct it right now because that's not great. But fresh pork rinds, they're fantastic. Chris, have you done the nachos yet?
No, but I'll get around to it. Maybe tonight. I know I say that often. Maybe tonight's the night.
I really hope it is because that would be fantastic to see. But these are a great snack.
I'd love to break into those freaky pork rinds and just see what they're all about. You know,
all right, I made a mistake. Let's settle down. Those are really good, though. You know, everybody asks me, they're like, sorry, this is a small bag. Am I going to finish this in one sitting? Nope. You're going to use 1/8 of a cup and you're going to be stuffed because these things expand, folks. So just follow the label. Don't try to be a hero.
No, don't be a hero.
And add how many you think you can eat. Just watch the label and follow it.
And if you have tried the pork rinds, send us a video of them in the microwave.
I've had them out of the microwave. They're good. They're good. Air fryer obviously is a little bit better, but they are solid out of the microwave. And you know what? Gotta be honest with you, Chris. I've had them out of the microwave more often than I have the air fryer. No cleanup. You put them on 2 pieces of paper towel. That's the quickest snack I think you can have.
I haven't ripped open the bacon flavored one.
Okay,
yet.
So I've only had the bacon.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to ask you. Which one's better? Because I've only had the original.
Well, the bacon's really good.
Okay, well, I'll try the bacon one.
And the original, you can put the popcorn seasoning. I've got a little dill pickle popcorn seasoning. I might put that on the original.
Yeah, I've done the white cheddar. Did the white cheddar last week. It was good.
Maybe bacon dill pickle. Okay. Let's get on to this.
Put a little pizza spice on there.
Yeah. Talking. Promo code CC15. 15% off your first order of Pop Rinds at atlasgds.com. Our poll question today, which prospect will play an NHL game first? Chris, so far leading the vote, Linus Karlsson with 63%, followed by Aiden McDonough with 23%, and Nils Åman, 8%. 6% say I'm angry / other. Nobody's written in any votes, though.
So just angry.
People are just angry, I think there's no prospects.
I'm a little angry at the way you did this poll question. That's why I do all the better poll questions.
Okay, tell me. Go ahead.
The fourth option's supposed to just be I'm angry.
Well, I wanted to give people the chance to write it in. Like, write in your vote.
What do you think? You're the the freaking reply button. The reply button's already there. You don't need to add the other people. People listen, you put out a poll and you put out three options and that person's option isn't there. They always comment, why isn't this person on the poll? Yeah, you're an idiot.
If blah, you blah, put blah. Other, we can avoid those criticisms.
No, because they're still going to put it on there.
No, nobody has so far.
I'm angry that I'm angry isn't its own poll, our option for the poll.
All right, will you just tell me who you think is going to get an NHL game first? Who's making their NHL debut first here? Yeah,
first game. I think it's going to be Linus Karlsson. I'm not saying he's going to be the best NHL player of the three either. He might, but I just think that Linus Karlsson probably sets himself up to be in that position where, you know, if the Canucks start to see some injuries to their top nine, they're looking down in Abbotsford. Maybe Linus Karlsson's one of the options that they want to see because I think he's going to be playing power play. He's going to be playing penalty kill. He's going to be an important piece for the Abbotsford Canucks this year. Aiden McDonough, we're not even going to see until, you know, late March, early April at the earliest for him to come potentially be a Vancouver Canuck. And as for Nils Åman, I think that might be the wild card here. Like, if you're giving me good odds on Nils Åman being the option, like if you're giving me, like, you know, Karlsson at like 3-1, but you're giving me Åman at like 10-1, I might take Åman as the long shot here because I tell you, the way that he moves around the ice, he's a big body, he gets around the ice real quick, man. I like him, but he's a little out of control at times. We saw in drills, but you got to see him in the scrimmage as well. Like, he flies, man. He's a quick skater. There's a reason why, you know, Team Sweden used him at the World Championships instead of Linus Karlsson, right? Like, let's not forget that Linus Karlsson was ninth in scoring in the SHL. He didn't get called on for one game in the World Championships. You know, Nils Åman played the whole World Championships with Sweden. So there's a reason why they like him, and he might be the guy. Like, I'm not surprised that he has such a low percentage, but sneakily, and if you gave me better odds, I might go with Nils Åman here.
And I agree with you, actually. I pointed this out because this was a question that was posed just by one of our media colleagues when we were in the stands. Just like, you know, it's looking bleak for the prospects and everything. We're at prospect camp. Who's the next guy to make their debut was the question that was thrown. And I said Nils Åman. And the reason I said that was just because you see a move, you see the way he's handling the puck, and he looked like he was a step above everybody else. And I think it's tough to actually say Nils Åman because we don't know if he's going to be in the AHL next year. Right? So that kind of hinders him a little bit.
He was asked about it, and he didn't give like a... He didn't give the answer that you'd like to hear, but he also didn't like, it was weird. The answer was just like, it didn't push the needle either way. He was like, I have a contract here, but like, I haven't fully made a decision. I'd love to play for the Vancouver Canucks or something along those lines.
Yeah, like, it was this sounds like a player who wants to make the NHL and who doesn't, but it also does sound like a player who maybe doesn't want to go down to the A.
But like, depending what, you know, Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford and Bruce Boudreau want to do with that fourth line, they might see him at training camp, and he might be a guy who is skating super quick and banging bodies and looking good in scrimmages, and then they see him and they see Will Lockwood, and they're like, well, this Nils Åman guy is 4 inches taller than Will Lockwood. He's going around. He can take faceoffs. He's a guy who, you know, can kill penalties. He did that at the SHL level. Like, you know, Patrick Alvin went out and signed this guy as a European free agent. I don't know. I wonder if that's a thing that we have to watch at training camp. One of those stories when we talk about the fourth line battle is Nils Åman and Will Lockwood. Is Åman at that level where we can get excited about him challenging Will Lockwood for a fourth line spot?
And we didn't actually talk about free agency, which is so funny because I thought we did, but we didn't. We recorded our last episode on Tuesday and we were like, we'll talk about free agency on Friday. So without further ado, I want to get to it because Dakota Joshua is the name that comes to mind of the Canucks signings when you just bring up the fourth line. Look, this is a big body who can skate. He likes to throw his weight around. And look, Patrick Alvin was asked flat out if he views this as an NHL player, and Alvin said he does. Like, this is someone who I think is going to play at the NHL level. The description I got when I asked someone about it was, he is what Canucks fans think Will Lockwood is. He's a big body that can throw his weight around, and, you know, he is an energy guy. He's got speed. He's got size. Like, this is something this team needs on their fourth line, and I really like the Dakota Joshua signing. This was a player that a lot of teams were interested in, so for the Canucks to be able to get him, that's a win in my books. I know there was a bit of a uproar when Matthew Highmore and Juho Lamico, who... Lamico remains unsigned. Highmore signs in St. Louis on a two-way contract. you know, there was some uproar when these guys weren't qualified by the Canucks, but if your sideways move is to get Dakota Joshua instead of Matthew Highmore, instead of a Will Lockwood, who, you know, now is going to be fighting with a guy like Nils Åman for the fourth line spot, like, that's a good sideways move to replace Dakota Joshua, or to replace those two guys with Dakota Joshua. I really like this player.
Yeah, he's not a scorer. Like, you know, I saw him play a handful of games with Utica a couple years ago as well. He's not a scorer, but he definitely, like, he's quick. He's hard on the forecheck. He's going to bring something to the team. Like, I don't know. I look at Juho Lamico and I look at Matthew Highmore, and I think probably more upside on those two players for fourth line scoring, if I'm being honest, from what I've seen from Joshua. And I don't think that he's the type of guy who's going to, you know, get over 10 goals on your fourth line, but I think he's a fine 13th forward to come in and bring some energy every, and he might not be a guy who needs to be in the lineup every night, but if you're wanting to rotate a little bit on your fourth line, I think that's fine. But I don't know. I'm not as high on Joshua as a lot of people
I think I disagree a little bit on what you want from a fourth line, because yeah, it's great if your fourth line can chip in every now and then, but I don't think you want your fourth line to just be, oh, they can maybe score 10 goals sometimes and sometimes not get scored on. I think you kind of want your fourth line to be, you know, similar to what Luke Shen brings on the back end. You needed a forward like that. Like, Yannick Hansen spoke about it on Sportsnet 650. He said, like, this team needs size up front. And, look, they answer that question a little bit with Dakota Joshua. Like, you need a guy who can play, and his underlying numbers have been actually pretty good. I got that from Daniel Wagner. I was just looking at his height and weight when I evaluated this player and the fact that he could skate. But his analytics look fine, apparently. That's what Wags told me. And, look, when I evaluate this team, I really do think that one thing that they really did need to address is size up front, and they get it. And what Hansen brought up specifically on 650 was, look, it's great that Will Lockwood likes to skate around and likes to throw hits, but he's like, you can't do that over a full season if you're Will Lockwood size. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. There's very rare instances where a guy can do that, but Hansen said, he's like, when you're throwing hits when you're that size and you're hitting bigger guys, you're really taking the brunt of it, even if it doesn't look like it. You're the one that's hurting more in the long run. So you can't expect Will Lockwood to do that, one, over the full course of a season, and two, to do it effectively over the full course of a season. But you get that from Joshua.
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm being honest, I'd still look at, you know, and I'm happy that he re-signed, but to me, if I'm building a fourth line, I'd still rather have Phil DiGiuseppe there than Dakota Joshua, honestly. I'd like to, I don't know, like, I still think that Phil DiGiuseppe should be given a shot in
I
the
think
NHL.
I think he will get a shot
next year. It doesn't make sense to me that he wasn't given a decent run as a fourth line guy, because, listen, he doesn't need to be the skill player. Like, in the AHL, he's that, right? He's a first line guy in the AHL. That's the thing about Joshua, is like, he's not a first line guy in the AHL. Mm-hmm. He's a, you know, a middle six guy in the AHL. I just think that if DiGiuseppe, this is a year for him where it's like, you know, he didn't get the shot last year. He was already motivated coming to last year to prove that he's an AHL player. I bet he's even more motivated this year going into it to be an impact player. I don't know. I know a lot of people are real excited about the Joshua signing, especially Patrick Alvin. It was weird how much he brought up Dakota Joshua as an example when we were doing the presser with him. But to me, like, I still, you know, I got to see more of him, obviously, and see how he fits with this team. But there's other players on this team in this organization I'd rather see on the fourth line.
Yeah, very
true. I've seen Joshua play. Nothing really stuck out for me. And it wasn't even like the stuff that you're talking about. It's like, I didn't see a lot of energy from him, right? Like, that everyone seems to be so excited about. I don't know. I'm just not as high on him as a lot of people seem to be in this market. And don't get me wrong, maybe I'm hoping he surprises me, but I also still, like, I'm still pretty high on Phil DiGiuseppe being a guy who should be in the NHL playing fourth line minutes and killing penalties and, you know, playing 9 minutes a night at 5-on-5. Like, that's what I think Phil DiGiuseppe can do.
You have to assume that that's kind of going to be one of the battles, right? Is Joshua versus DiGiuseppe?
Well, you can put it all out there that it's like, it's going to be Joshua, Almond, Lockwood, DiGiuseppe. They'll all be fighting for that fourth line winger spot.
Yeah.
Who gets the incredible title of being Jason Dickinson's winger on the fourth line?
That's a really good question. All right.
Tyler Mott's still out there.
Tyler Mott is still out
there. What's he doing? What's he getting?
I think St. Louis needs to go after Tyler Mott and Juho Lamico, because they've already got Highmore. Yeah. Why wouldn't you put that line together, sure, that worked for some reason?
Yeah. All right. Next up.
Okay. Ilya Mikheyev signed to a 4-year deal with an annual average value of $4.75 million. What did you think about that signing? Because I got a little bit of a gripe because I'm hearing a lot of people say, oh, well, they're overpaying for a bottom six winger. And it's just, I don't agree with that. Like, there's a difference between a middle six winger and a bottom six winger. And Ilya Mikheyev, in my mind, is a middle six winger who probably is going to play on this team's second line out of training camp.
Yep. I mean, it's like, Mikheyev is a more sure bet to be a middle, like a top six winger, I think, than Kuzmenko is, right? Like, you feel more confident about Mikheyev being able to play in the top six than you do with Kuzmenko, because you just don't know about the what's going to happen there. But, like, it's, you know, the other thing that's interesting is just, like, the fact that they go and sign a winger on a pretty big deal is, like, man, they need to make some moves. They really need to hit the trade market because we just kind of talked about, like, who's going to win the fourth line battle between Joshua and DiGiuseppe. Well, the fourth line right now, like, looking at the depth chart is, what, Tanner Pearson and Nils Höglander. So you need to make some moves, man. Like, you can't, you know, Nils Höglander was in the top six a couple of years ago, and now you're just like, there's so much at the forward group that it's like, you need to really start to use that to address what's happening on the back end. And if Nils Höglander is playing fourth line minutes, you might need to start to view him as like one of the guys that could be on the outs, right? And I don't think that's comes as much as a surprise. He's not a big body. He's not necessarily a flat-out burner, and you could kind of see the way that Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, the player type that they like, when they went out and signed Mikheyev, and I think he's going to be an impact player. And listen, I love Nils Höglander. I think he's a guy at 5-on-5 who creates, but him and Connor Garland just feel like they're on, you know, on the outs right now when you start to talk about a defenseman that the Canucks need to trade for. You know, you've heard out of Pittsburgh that they have, you know, they have 9 NHL defensemen right now, and they said that they won't have 9 when they get to training camp. You start to put the pieces together, man. Like, the, you know, we haven't said his name a while on this show, actually, but like the John Marino deal, it feels like it's coming down the pipe here pretty soon.
And maybe not necessarily with the Canucks, but John Marino has been shopped by the Penguins, reportedly by a lot of different outlets have been reporting that, but Marcus Pettersson's the other one that people look at. Like, the Canucks have a real chance to corner the market on all the Pettersons. They've already got all the Elias Pettersons. Now they could, you know, they could add another Pettersson. In all seriousness, as a right-handed defenseman who probably isn't going to cost the world because he's played more of a 4-5 role up to this point, but I don't think you want to shoot that low. I think you want to go for the John Marino, or you want to go for a completely different target. I don't know exactly what the Canucks are looking for, but they do need to rework the defense. And the messaging we've been hearing from Rutherford and Alvin is that this is going to take some time. Like, they're not rushing into anything because that's how you make bad moves. They're going to wait. They're going to take their time. And you wonder how much more time it's going to be because, like, the clock is ticking, right? Like, the season's going to start sooner than we think.
Yeah, exactly. And Canucks fans have been burned with running out of time in the past. Like, this is why the pressure point is being talked about, right? And I'm sure we'll get to it in a little bit here, but hearing Jim Rutherford on Donnie and Dolly, their final show, I mean, Dollywall and Donnie bringing some fire on the way out into vacation. That's a good move right there. A veteran move, bringing your hot takes on the final day before summer break. But yeah, they need to make a move, right? Like, they need to move from one of their wingers to benefit the team as a whole, and it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, because it's, you know, the guys that we talk about, it seems to be Connor Garland and Nils Höglander, and I don't like those two players being the guys that are on the outs, because I really think that those are two really good 5-on-5 producers of offense, and that's been a struggle for the Vancouver Canucks for so long, is being able to produce at 5-on-5, and you have two guys that do that offensively, and yeah, they might not be the strongest in their own zone. I don't think Garland's as bad as some people think that he is, but you know, Nils Höglander's had his struggles in the defensive zone for sure, and some team might value him as a middle six forward when he could be playing fourth line minutes under Bruce Boudreau. So yeah,
the only gripe I have with that, Chris, is that's two examples of selling when guys are at probably their lowest value that they've ever been in their careers at any point in their career. I don't like that. That's just bad. That's bad business, right? And I don't know.
Well, then, like, who do they trade? Which winger do they trade? Tanner Pearson?
Dude, that's the thing.
There's nobody bringing a second round pick for Tanner Pearson
right now. Exactly. And we've heard that there's just no interest in the Canucks players right now. Like, there's not a market for a lot of the Canucks players. And that includes JT Miller, apparently. There's not a real market for JT Miller. Like, things seem to have really cooled down on the JT Miller front. And Rutherford talked about it on Donnie and Dolly today. You kind of alluded to it, and we'll get to that right now because you know, I do have some thoughts on this.
In a perfect world, Jim, what happens with JT Miller for your organization?
Well, I'll say the obvious. It can go two ways. We, you know, we can come to an agreement and keep him, and we have a very good player. That's always difficult to do when a player is heading to free agency within a year, and he's got really good numbers. So, of course, what the player is expecting in the way of a contract compared to the team is usually different. And so we're trying to work through that process. And if that doesn't work, we have to get the best return we can for him. But I think when the impatience should come on JT Miller is when we get closer to the trade deadline. And if we don't have him signed at that point, making sure that we get a return for him. Mm-hmm. But I don't see where there's any urgency until we get to the trade deadline.
Now, the key word there, Chris, is urgency and the trade deadline. Time for another quad rant. We need to get some stinger music or something for this because I've been, past couple episodes, I've done little rants, and this is another one of them, Chris, because today I'm going to talk about ownership meddling. And that's something that I know a lot of Canucks fans are scared of for a number of reasons, right? And what I want to talk about is that Rutherford's been asked about it, about managing up, right? And the last time he was asked about it was at the end of season media availability. And he said he hasn't had to manage up at all. Him and Francesco Aquilini go out for lunch once every 2 weeks. And I've talked about this before. Contrast that with the last management regime where Benning was talking about how often him and Francesco Aquilini were talking
every
about.
Every day he said they talked.
Every day they were talking. So every 2 weeks compared to every day. Right now we have to go off the word of Jim Rutherford that there's no meddling from ownership. The reason that I bring this up, Chris, is because right now, the messaging that we need to hold this organization accountable to is the messaging that Jim Rutherford just gave in that clip. And I don't know if you heard it, but what he said was, we need to start getting impatient around the trade deadline, and if we don't have a contract by that point, we need to flip him for an asset. Does that messaging change if the Canucks are in eighth place? Does that messaging change if the Canucks are second or third in the Pacific, Chris? Does it change? Because it shouldn't. And if the Canucks are to lose JT Miller for nothing and, you know, they go on some sort of playoff run and all of a sudden the messaging is changing from up top with Jim Rutherford, that's when you can start to think, who's really calling the shots here, right? And it's, again, this is speculation, but if we get to that point, that's something that you need to hold the organization accountable to. If Jim Rutherford says we need to get an asset for this player, and he's saying that right now in July, and you assume that he thinks his team is going to be in a playoff spot by the trade deadline, and he's saying that, we need to be asking questions about that.
Rutherford said there's two options.
Exactly.
He said it's an extension or it's a trade for the good for a best offer.
Yep.
The third option that could end up happening, I think Canucks fans are most worried about, is, yeah, you're right, they're in a playoff run, or they're pushing for a playoff spot. You keep on to JT Miller. The worst case scenario is you miss the playoffs by a couple of points and JT Miller walks for nothing. And if that happens,
sorry, I would argue, and sure, that is the worst case scenario, but they, I would argue, yeah, right behind it is them making the playoffs, getting bounced in like the first or second round, and JT Miller walking for nothing.
Johnny Gaudreau just walked for nothing.
Look at what that's done to the Flames, too. Like, look at how in shambles the Calgary Flames are right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's totally messing up their organization. They are literally trying to pick up the pieces, quite literally, because they found out the night before that Johnny Gaudreau was leaving.
It's like throwing the Flames into a spot right now where, like, the things that I've heard from people talking about the Flames is, like, is it time for a full rebuild, or exactly, do you like have to go all in right now? And like, there's talks of like Matthew Tkachuk. Should he even be here long term? Is it time to move on from him and start the rebuild? Right, like that's wild. I don't think it would happen the same way with the Vancouver Canucks because it's not like JT Miller is a massive piece of the core. He was their best player last year, but like we've said in the past, he isn't the biggest piece of this core. He's not even the top three if you look at it really for the future. But that's the thing. It's like, I do get worried a little bit of thinking that the trade deadline or a month before the trade deadline is when Canucks fans should start to get anxious about it. Like, we've talked about it a little bit. Like, what if he does get hurt? You know,
exactly. And well, I think and that's
horrible for him, obviously, but it's mm-hmm. also horrible for the team. And I mean, I don't think that. Listen, that deal that was offered from the Rangers that we've heard reported. Are you getting a better deal than that for him to be a one playoff run rental? You might, but I'm not confident that you do.
Yeah, I don't think you do. I don't think you do. And you might, because that is a traditional trade deadline package, and it's understandable why the Canucks... And he could
easily be the number one piece, like, especially if the Canucks are way out of it and they're holding on to half of his money. Like, you know, a team would pay a lot for that. You're still getting a return, but to me, like, the, you know, to get him done, to get this done in the offseason here where the team that's able to re-sign him is still the best way. Like, that's the biggest return. But it's hard for teams. Like, you know, with the cap situation, I think that this, like, it's why I look back at two trade deadlines, like, at the last trade deadline when it was like, this is when you can get a haul for JT Miller, it felt like. Because it was like, you're getting two playoff runs of JT Miller at 5.25. Like, I know you didn't want to rush into it, but you are getting into the betting camp of, like, you could run out of time of getting a big haul back when I think his value is at the highest when you got two playoff runs of him at 5.25, and then you could talk extension after.
Look, the simple
fact... Now it's all about the extension.
Yeah, it is. And the simple fact of the matter, Chris, is that the longer the Canucks wait to deal JT Miller, the more risk they're running. The more risk they're running that there won't be interested teams, the more risk they're running that they'll be in a playoff spot and have a difficult decision to make, is running the risk that he'll get hurt. The risk just increases with each passing day that they don't move JT Miller. That's just the simple fact of the matter. And right now, Canucks fans are a little bit weary of that because they're saying, okay, what if he does get hurt? What if they're in a playoff spot? Like, what happens? Does the messaging change, right, with Jim Rutherford, right? And that's the one thing that I'm looking at is just, does the messaging change if the Canucks are in a playoff spot? Does Jim Rutherford come out and say, yeah, I know I said that we needed to get an asset, but we also owed it to our players or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, what does Very the messaging possible. Change, right? Because right now, that's not even in the cards. That's not even mentioned by Jim Rutherford. So I just thought that was interesting. I thought that it was something that I wanted to have pointed out on the show today.
And we'll be interested to see over the next, basically, like, week here. And we're not taking any more time off either. So we're going to be here every Tuesday and every Saturday talking about this. But it'll be interesting in the next 10 days here to kind of see if a team looks to pull the trigger because they missed out in free agency. I mean, the Islanders have come up. You mentioned the Predators now being mentioned by Elliot Friedman as an example. So, like, teams are going to start to pop up around JT Miller, and we're going to keep talking about it until it gets done. I know that I find it interesting how much the Vancouver Canucks mentioned that, you know, JT was our best player last year. It feels like that's been, like, the universal front for the general manager and now the president, because he said it today on Donnie and Dolly, of, like, you know, they want people to know that he was their best player last year, then he's a 99-point player and does all this stuff and plays center, because, listen, man, JT Miller is a very good player in the NHL, and we'll see what the return happens when it comes in. But, man, it's going to be a long off season of speculating until then. And then this puts the player in a tough spot too, right, with all of this going on and this market being the way that it is. And I'm not even, like, saying that the market's the worry here. It's like people care, right? Which is a good thing. Because imagine JT Miller's, you know, think about like Phil Kessel in Arizona. Nobody cared about what happened with Phil Kessel in Arizona. And, like, you know, nothing came of it either. And he just kind of faded away. I'm not saying that's what happened to JT Miller, but it's good that people care. It's good that people want to see this Canucks team do the right move here. And I think people are worried because this market that has been engaged for so many years hasn't seen the team do the right thing in the end. So that's why they're worried. And that's why people are going to have to ask him questions. Us in the media, it's our job to ask the things that fans want to hear. And we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't asking JT Miller about it. And that sucks, right? Like, it sucks for him to answer that. But that's the situation that he's in. And that's what we're going to have at training camp once we get there. Is, like, you know, I think at training camp what we're going to be talking about is, like, Bo Horvat's new deal, because I think he'll have a deal by then, And we'll be talking about the JT Miller situation if he's not dealt, and what, you know, all the trade rumors around him, and if he wants to stay here, if he wants to play in the States. Like, all these questions are going to come up, and that's a bad spot to be in for the player.
Yeah, it is, and there's a lot of speculation that's still to come, I'm sure. I just want it to be over. I just want them to either sign this guy or trade him. I'm exhausted, and I know all the readers and listeners are, too. I'm getting messages of it.
They're my goodness.
Stop writing and talking about JT Miller. It's like, we have to. Like, that's literally what we have to do right now. I think we're doing a disservice if we don't at least talk about it. Maybe not every week. We'll probably tone it down a little.
We should do a Millerless week.
Millerless week. That'd be fun.
We'll do it on the show, too.
I'm down with that.
Can I do a? I didn't. There's a prospect I didn't.
Hang
get to
on,
mention.
I got one more free agent that I need to mention. So Colin Delia was signed, goaltender with the Chicago Blackhawks, signed to the Vancouver Canucks, one-way contract. So Chris, what this tells me, and I confirmed this by talking to Patrick Alvin in his little media scrum that he did, there's going to be a battle between Spencer Martin and Colin Delia. You know, Archer Seelovs and Mikey DiPietro, you could throw them in there too. Everybody's going to have a chance because nobody has a no-move clause this year for the backup position. But really, it's Colin Delia and Spencer Martin who are going to be battling for that spot of NHL backup. What was curious to me, Chris, is that I asked Alvin in my follow-up to that question of, okay, so is the plan to run three goaltenders again in Abbotsford? And he said, no, the plan is to run two, so there's going to be competition down in Abbotsford as well. The Canucks don't have an ECHL affiliate. I don't think they're going to be afraid to loan a goaltender to the ECHL, but it is good to see that they're not going to do the three goaltender thing again because it benefits nobody. I asked Ian Clark about the quote afterwards, and I know people on Twitter kind of ran away with the Alvin quote that I got from him and said, well, this means Mikey DiPietro is done. I'll touch on that in a second. But I asked Ian Clark about the three goalies in Abbotsford, and he said, really, that benefits nobody. It doesn't benefit the organization. It doesn't benefit the goaltenders for sure. Like, goaltenders need to play. And he pointed to Archer Seelovs and said, look, like, this is a guy who, for all the talk that was made of Mikey DiPietro, and I must say, Clarkey did not invoke Mikey DiPietro's name. That's just me saying that for all the talk that was made of Mikey DiPietro. Look, like, Clark brought up, Archer Seelovs didn't play much the past 2 years, right? And, you know, I know he kind of flies under the radar a little bit when it comes to that, but like, Seelovs hasn't played a lot in the last 2 years, and he's someone the organization's very high on, so I'm looking for him to maybe go to the ECHL, maybe be the guy in Abbotsford. I wonder what the next step is, Chris, because I'm not closing the door on a Mikey DiPietro trade. I haven't heard much about interest or anything like that, if I'm being honest with you, but I'm not closing the door on a Mikey DiPietro trade, but that's not necessarily because of the organization saying they're going to run two goaltenders in Abbotsford. I just think in an ideal world, and this is me talking, in an ideal world, Archer Seelovs and one of Spencer Martin and Colin Delia are the two goaltenders down in Abbotsford next season. I think in an ideal world, that's what you most want. Like, the fact of the matter is that you need these goaltenders to play games, and I think Archer Seelovs at this point in time has the higher ceiling than Mikey DiPietro. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that I haven't given up on Mikey DiPietro, but the clock is running out a little bit. And I think Archer Seelovs is the guy that you want to get into game action, if not only because that he hasn't done that much in the last 2 years. So something to keep an eye on. Colin Delia adds to the goaltender depth in the organization. There's four spots available. They have five goaltenders at the time of this recording.
Yeah, and then I asked Ryan Johnson about the goaltending coach situation in Abbotsford, and though we heard rumblings that there might not be one out there, from what I heard from chatting with some people at development camp, Ryan Johnson confirmed to me that they are working on bringing in a goaltender
coach.
Clark
told me the same thing. They're in the process of it, and Clark even said he's like,
We saw Ian Clark's kid out there quite a bit at development camp. He was putting sticks away. He was filling water bottles. Could we see Ian Clark's child?
He's like 11.
Well, I tell you what, he dressed the part. He looked good. And Clarky was making him work. There was a time on, I think, day three where Clark's kid knocked over the sticks, and the stare that Ian gave his son. Oh, my goodness. It was melting the ice with the stare that he.
And Ryan Johnson got to see the whites of his eyes.
Yeah, he did. That was,
Okay, but yeah, I just wanted to close out by saying, the two goaltenders in Abbotsford has been confirmed. It's a very interesting thing. What it does tell me for sure, there's going to be competition. next year for the crease at both levels.
Any other takeaways from your... You had a good little one-on-one with Clark. I know you're going to put in an article.
Yeah, I'm going to put in an article. I think I'll save most of it. I just... They're high on Aku, obviously. They like Ty Young for a lot of the same reasons that they like Aku. Yeah, I'm not going to say much more than that.
Yeah, found it interesting. The quote that I got from Koskinen about Clark was like, the best goalie coach I've ever worked with, top-notch. It's what we hear a lot, obviously, when we hear young goalies work out with Ian Clark. Can I do my last little prospect thing? I need to mention this name.
Yeah, go for it.
Because you mentioned it a little bit. I don't think I got a chance to really talk about him that much, but Jonathan Meierenberg, the right-shot defenseman. I thought he was the best defenseman at this development camp. Like, I think through and through, watching everything that Jonathan Meierenberg was able to do with his skating, with his ability to see the ice, his shot looks like it's improved. He's put on a lot of weight, was he was saying. Like, he's put on a lot of muscle ever since he got to Linköping, I believe is how they pronounce it over there. But Jonathan Meierenberg is going to be loaned to the Allsvenskan next year, he told me. And he's excited for it because he's going to get a lot of minutes. He's going to get more opportunity. He's going to be able to do power play, penalty kill, be a guy who's relied upon a lot. And from the people that we like to follow in the SHL, who cover the SHL, Alexa Potak being an example, she's very high on Jonathan Meierenberg. And we've heard that there's a lot of people in the Canucks organization that are pretty high on Jonathan Meierenberg as well from whispers around the organization. And I could see why. Like, I really did think that he was the best defenseman at this camp. I was pleasantly surprised, had a really good chat with him. He's a smart kid. And I'm going to be keeping my eyes on him a lot more. Like, just from seeing him play in camp and being able to go back and watch some video of him in the SHL over the past couple days here, he's going up in the rankings for the Canucks prospects for next year. Has he jumped yet, Wu? I think so. As a teenager,
wow.
I think he has a better chance of making the NHL. Not like, you know, not next season.
Not higher on the depth chart per se, but he has higher upside, is what you're saying.
Yeah, right now he's not the higher player on the depth chart, but I think he has a better chance of playing more games in the NHL than Jet Wu.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So
he's jumping up in the prospect rankings.
I was also
and
impressed.
He looked good.
Yeah, he did.
And he's big. Like, he's a big 6'2", 6'3" defenseman. You know, around 200 pounds. Like, he looks big and he moves well. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he does in the Allsvenskan. And I hope he has a really good season.
Yeah, and you had a good one-on-one with him. You wrote about it at CanucksArmy.com. People should go check that out.
He does the same hair as you, the split down the middle thing sometimes that you do.
Looks fantastic.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Okay. You're going to go tell Jonathan Meierenberg to his face that you don't like his haircut?
No, but you and him had similar looks, actually. He had his shirt tucked into his pants like you did.
That's the way to do it.
The dad look.
Classy. I had my Nike Monarchs, Air Monarchs on.
Yeah, Father Meierenberg out there.
Yeah. Yeah, someone actually commented on our YouTube video. Also, subscribe to the Nation Network on YouTube, folks, because we've been cranking out the stand-ups. I think we're going to do them throughout the summer as well.
Yeah.
But... You know, I had the golf shirt tucked into the jeans, and people had some fun with that.
Well, time that I bought you that golf shirt as a gift. You've never worn it.
I've worn it a lot. I've worn it to play golf. You bought it for me in the winter. So when was I going to wear that?
Anytime. Just to show me a little respect and just be like, oh, look, I'm wearing that shirt you got me.
I've worn it like 6 times in front of you now, but I wore it in the summer. You buy me a golf shirt in the winter, and you're like, in like... April, you're like, you haven't worn it. I'm like,
we had some sunny days in March, Quads. You could have pulled out the shirt.
I didn't golf.
We haven't golfed yet this summer.
No, we haven't. We should get on that.
Yeah.
Take a little vacation. Donnie and Dolly.
No, we can't take vacations anymore. We had our vacation.
I'm taking a vacation in August.
What the hell?
Middle of August. You're going on a houseboat next weekend.
Yeah, but that's not a vacation. We're going to be putting in some work on that houseboat.
You will be.
Yeah.
I'll be getting a different co-host for that episode, so that should be a fun one.
Yeah, you'll have a good one next weekend for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited for that episode. Don't want to say who I think is going to host, but it should be a pretty fun episode for sure. All right, we'll close it out there. For my co-host, Chris Faber, my name is David Quadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The playoffs are near and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.